Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Oh, hello, welcome along to another Tech Talk. It is I, Stephen Scott, with you here, and also joining me, Robin Christofferson, the head of Digital Inclusion at AbilityNet. Hello to you, Robin.
Hello, I'm really glad to be back.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to be back as well. We've got so much to get through over the next hour. And I have to say, Robin, I'm quite excited this hour because we're going to be hearing all about some major changes coming to the RNIB Talking Books service. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I'm so excited about this is because, as you know, for a long time now, we've been getting emails about Overdrive from RNIB, you know, the digital version of RNIB Talking Books. And let's be frank about it, they've not been positive. And that's putting it mildly. So for that reason, I am really, really excited to learn about some of the changes that are coming. Alison Long is going to be joining us. She is the head of consumer services at RNIB. She'll be joining us shortly to tell us about some of those changes. Really looking forward to hearing her. And as well as that, you are going to be demoing haptic feedback on the iPhone. Do you want to give us a bit of an insight into what's to come?
Yeah, I love this new feature. You can now have taps under your fingertips with everything that you do, basically, in iOS 13.
You mean the thing that's been in Android for years?
Yeah.
Yeah, just thought I'd throw that in there. Yeah, so Android have had this for long enough, but I have to say, having downloaded the iOS 13 beta in advance of its official launch next month, I am rather impressed by this, and I will say you're absolutely right, this is available across the system and it does actually make a difference. We're going to hear how it works and how you can enjoy it as well. It does make your phone feel just a bit different to use, which is good. So yeah, that's all on the way, and we've got emails as well. Andy's here with those. Hello, Andy.
Hello, how are you both?
Yes, I'm well. Can't speak for him, but I'm all right. So yeah, that's all to come today. And of course, Ask Tech Talk as well. Our question comes from Mel Maidment, who's got in touch. He wants to ask the question about Windows Remote Desktop. Ooh, that's very technical. I suppose we are a tech show. It kind of makes sense. But I just want to take you back now. 24 years. I feel like a child back then. I probably was.
Because of you were.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I think we all were, actually, to some degree. But yeah, let's see if you remember this noise. Oh. Ah, the days when computers were awful, frankly. But yeah, you know, I mean, reasonable.
Slow, not much space to put anything on.
That's right.
Exactly.
Cost a fortune as
Cost
well.
Cost a fortune, yeah.
I remember looking at an article for a computer, and it was something like it had a, you know, hard drive size of a couple of hundred megabytes. The RAM was like 512K. And, you know, they had I think it was a Pentium 3 processor in it. Oof. And it cost like 1,500 quid. And it was amazing. And, of course, in those days, they ran that. Windows 1995. Windows 95. Robin, do you remember much about 95? I certainly do.
Absolutely. And I have to take issue that it wasn't very good. They were expensive computers in those days, absolutely. But they ran, they were sweet. They were really more efficient. I mean, nowadays, you need to have ridiculous amounts of memory. And my son, for example, can't even update his Windows 10 machine because it hasn't got 8 gigabytes of free space that you need to just download and install the latest update. So, you know, we've really come on a long way. Do they feel faster these days than they did back then? I'm not actually sure that they do. But yeah, I've been using JAWS on Windows since 3.11.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, early 90s. So.
But do you know something? I think you're right. I think you're tapping into something there, that computers have become much more bloated these days. I mean, we all notice this. You know, you download your software and you get, you know, Solitaire and Solitaire Pro and, you know, games and all kinds of stuff that are added on that you don't really use. And I've spent most of my time after a download, after a big, especially when we got Windows 10, I remember in the house just sitting there going through all the apps list and just deleting and deleting and uninstalling and uninstalling. And even when you uninstall stuff, there's still lots of stuff left behind.
And Windows 10 came with a free trial of Minecraft, I seem to remember from last year when I got my machine, which is a stark contrast from Windows 95, which came with Solitaire.
Yeah.
Because there was no internet for Windows 95 back there in that time. So, yeah, if you were bored and you had nothing to do, it was solitaire, I'm afraid.
Or pinball. And they have Candy Crush and all sorts of things now that you can't actually get rid of.
I know, and you can't get rid of them exactly. It's stuck there.
I mean, things like opening Word, for example, takes as long today as it did back then. But at the same time, the other day I was thinking, oh, you know, I'm on a Skype meeting. I'm playing a video in the background. I'm doing this, that, and the other, and it all just works. So, you know, I think we shouldn't underestimate how far computers have come. But back then, they were solid. They were really good.
Yeah. I mean, I must admit, Windows 10 is a good product. And, you know, again, from the accessibility perspective, we've seen massive, massive changes in the last few years. I'd say in the last 2 years in particular. And we talked before about the updates to Narrator and Windows, the inbuilt screen reader and magnification software that just comes free with the device, and now how useful that is, especially for first-time screen reader or magnification users. I'm trying to think back, because at that time, my site was at a point where I probably wasn't using much in the way of accessibility, maybe just enlarging fonts or maybe the magnifier, but I can't remember that much about Narrator. I think about the last few years where we still talked about it being awful. Was it awful back then, or were you just using JAWS all the time, so it didn't matter?
I was using JAWS all the time, but it was awful. Yeah. It really was very, very, very basic, and most of the things that you would just tab around in Windows itself didn't speak well with Narrator. So it's not as if it was fine but not very sophisticated. It didn't even speak in half of Windows. So yeah, it was very, very basic, and the speech was really bad, and the delay when you were tabbing through or arrowing through things was marked. So it just was completely unworkable.
Yeah, well, thankfully things have changed, but no, it's nice to look back. 24 years since Windows 95 was released, and I saw lots of blind people in particular lamenting it this weekend, of actually going out, standing in line to buy the discs to install it. I mean, another thing that we just don't do anymore, you know, actually installing with physical media, CDs or floppy disks even. It does take me back, I tell you. But yeah, anyway, nice to look back occasionally. But I'm quite glad where we are. That's the good news. Just speaking of news, actually,
news
just a quick
from
one.
The internet.
Just a quick story we noticed as we came on today, and news that the BBC are going to be launching a rival to Amazon's Echo. Is that right, Andy?
Yeah, this was in the Guardian newspaper this morning, that the BBC are going to have their own voice assistant. It's been created by an in-house BBC team, and will be launching next year using the code word Beeb. So it's not going to be a physical product like the Lady A or the Google device. It's going to be built into the BBC website. So you can
say the word, you go to the website and then you say, what, Beeb?
Yes, there's no standalone physical product. Mm. But yes, you can be used to navigate around iPlayer on smart TVs and stuff like that.
I don't know if this is a good idea or not. I mean, I like the idea on the website. I suppose that's quite good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the great things about the Amazon Echo, especially for people who aren't that computer literate, you know, you think about this, right? So if you're, okay, let's imagine you're blind, right? And you're not particularly computer literate. In fact, you know what? Let's just imagine you're anyone who's not particularly computer literate. Mm-hmm. You've got to get yourself to the website to use this easy-to-use service, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the thing about the Amazon Echo and the Google Home and all of these smart technologies, let's just discount Siri for a minute because she's terrible. But, you know, take all that into account. It's a lot easier just to say, hey, Beeb, you know, tell me what's on BBC One tonight. And then, you know, that's, but actually the thing is, that already all exists on Amazon's Alexa and also the Google Home. So I don't quite understand what they're doing.
And I mean, the BBC skill on the Echo is getting better all the time. So I could imagine, and it also says in this Guardian article that it's not going to be, you know, it's going to concentrate mainly on querying BBC programs and services, etc. So I don't think it's going to be a fully fledged AI, you know, virtual assistant. Maybe it will be. Maybe it'll grow into that. But at the beginning, they're going to focus on accessing BBC related things. Mm. And they could just build that smarts into the BBC skill on the A-Lady, because it's good, but it would be great if it could blossom out into something that gave you all the information that you get through this Beeb lady on the website. And just a top tip, if people are using Chrome as their browser, and you absolutely should be, by the way.
Chrome is great.
Yeah, in the settings, you can go in and see which websites are allowed to access, for example, your microphone, your camera, are allowed to push you notifications. If you get pestered by CNET, for example, if you've ever visited a CNET website, you get loads of notifications pushed thereafter unless you change your settings. So go in and make sure that only certain websites are using, you know, the ones that you want to be able to access your camera, your microphone, things like that. And they all can do that. So it's pretty scary, to be honest. So obviously the Beeb would need to use, would need to have access to your microphone. And it should ask you when you first hit the BBC website, once they've set this up, so that thereafter, wherever you, whenever you go to that site, it's going to be listening for that Beeb wake word.
I quite like the idea of it in some ways. I do find using the computer in some places easier. I'm still very much, I think, at day, I'd say day two when it comes to computer usage. I've realised over the years, going from, you know, the level of vision I had to now, how I almost feel like everything's reset for me. I feel like I saw a great Daily Mash article the other morning. Just, you know, it says something like, you know, man inserted cotton bud too far into his ear and reset himself to factory settings. And I kind of think I've done that a little bit with where I am with computers, because, you know, I'll go to a website and it's just like day one again. It's like, right, how does this work? Because you're using it in a very different way. So I worry for people who aren't that up on websites how this would work. I think they should probably invest more into the skills. But yeah, we'll see how it all pans out. Very interesting nonetheless. Right, look, we're going to take a shift sideways a little bit, because a lot of you have been in touch asking us about RNIB Overdrive. And let's be frank about it. RNIB Overdrive has had its share of issues. It's not been the most accessible platform. It's not a service that's actually owned by RNIB. It's something that RNIB subscribes to place the library on. And that also has other complications in regards to the amount of books that can be available digitally. Well, all that is about to change. Alison Long is Head of Consumer Services at RNIB, and she's here now to tell us all about it. Hello to you, Alison.
Hello.
Welcome to the programme, and thank you for giving us your time. I know you're a very busy person, and I really do appreciate you coming on, Alison, because it's a good opportunity for us to talk about the issues that a lot of people have been talking to us about here on the show, about Overdrive, accessing talking books on different devices and all of that. And I know part of the reason we're talking here is to talk about the future of RNIB talking books, but I guess it is always important to acknowledge the challenges that have existed for many blind people, and that, of course, has been Overdrive, which hasn't, let's be honest, been the greatest system in the world for us to use as blind people.
Yes, and yeah, we acknowledge that. We have, you know, listened to customers and the challenges that they've had with Overdrive. Unfortunately, it has its limitations. It's not going to get any better. So, you know, we're moving on. So it would be great to talk about our exciting new development, delivering a new platform to replace it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are going to be stopped in their tracks when you said that. They'll say, oh, hang on, what? Moving on? Brilliant, okay. Because ultimately, and it's important to say this, that Overdrive is not an RNIB system, is it? It's not something that RNIB owns or indeed exerts any control over. We essentially subscribe to it. Is that fair?
That's right. So it's a library platform. It's what a lot of local libraries use to give their customers access to EPUB. We've used it to provide our audio books to our customers. But, you know, it has had its limitations, both in terms of usability and also in the quality of the books that we could provide.
OK, well, let's not dwell too much on it. I mean, we could go around the houses on Overdrive, and I'm sure lots of listeners I know will have questions about the decision to implement Overdrive. That's come up a few times. Why it happened, how we ended up in this place where we don't seem to have the same access to books that perhaps other countries have got, or at least is easy access. But you've admitted that, you know, we are moving on from Overdrive. So, you know, first of all, what is the timescale for the change? And let's then talk about the change itself. So, I mean, what are we talking here, the next few years, or is this months? What are we talking about?
So we've been busy building the new platform for a few months now, and actually we start to test it with customers next week. So we're doing some internal testing. It's not all set in stone. There's room to make some changes, depending on what the testing throws out. But we're looking towards the end of September, early October as a launch for our Overdrive customers. So we really want to help customers transition from RNIB Overdrive to the new platform before we start to kind of go out looking for new customers to use it.
Okay, so we're looking at kind of end of the year or just before the end of the year, so that's interesting. Yeah. Let's talk about the new service then. What is going to be different? What are we moving forward towards?
So we're moving to, taking on board the feedback, hopefully customers will think it's much more usable and accessible. It's been designed by us with blind, partially sighted staff involved in the build. And it will provide our DAISY books. So at the moment, we convert books to MP3 for Overdrive. It is a lesser quality. So our online customers will get the same quality as they do with our CD and USBs. And
so just on that point then, so I mean that alone for me is a bit of an audiophile here, that appeals to me because I was very aware of the audio quality difference with Overdrive, like you say, compared to the CD and USB. But does that allow the library then to increase in size?
Yes, so it is increasing year on year. I think if you wind the clock back, 3-4 years, we were adding 500 titles a year to the collection. We're now over 30,000 books. In the past 2-3 years, with donations from some of the big publishing houses, we're adding over 2,000 titles a year to the collection, and that will accelerate in the next year as we change our technology to be able to ingest books at a greater pace than we currently can.
But the amount of books that were available on Overdrive were less, weren't there? There was less books available on Overdrive as opposed to the general RNIB library.
There was, and that was really about publisher rights rather than RNIB. Some publishers just wouldn't let us put their collections onto RNIB Overdrive, and it was about the Overdrive the association with library. So we are talking to those publishers, and we're already hearing from some of them. We haven't spoken to all of them as yet, that they are happy moving forward that we can put their books on our new platform. So we're hoping that we will be able to, regardless of how you want to listen, you will be able to access the same collection. There won't be any difference.
I think that's the key point for many of us because, for me, when I heard about Overdrive at the very beginning, I thought, brilliant, finally, we're getting downloadable audiobooks that I can get, just like Audible, there I said it. But it is, ultimately, it's a library collection that you can choose to download. I mean, it's different to Audible, yeah, obviously, because you're buying the book there. But the point is that you've then got access to those downloadable books, and what became clear over time was that the amount of books available was not the same. That if you were part of the RNIB library, you would have a big collection of books to choose from, Overdrive a lesser amount of books to choose from. And that was more of a challenge. If you wanted the book, if you really wanted a particular book and it wasn't an Overdrive, you'd get it on the library, of course, but that might take longer. You'd have to get it on CD or USB.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is that essentially now both libraries merge. And do we think then of it as one library as opposed to two? Because that's how I've thought about it for a while.
Yes, we definitely do. And we're not giving it a name as such. You know, we called it our online service Overdrive. Mm. It's just the online reading service. So, you know, we offer a reading service which encompasses our library and our news agents. And, you know, you either have things by post or you have them online. And it really doesn't make any difference to the content that you can enjoy. So it's, you know, you choose what you want to read, when and how you want to read it, and, you know, we will offer choice.
I mean, I'll be honest, this sounds like all the right answers to all the questions that I think most of us out there have been asking. You know, it's almost as if about time someone's got it. How has it taken so long, or why has it taken so long, do you think, to get to this point? Is it all money?
It's not all money. I mean, you know, developing an online platform is not an overnight job. It's, you know, part of it's about having the budget in place, but it's also about having the skills and the partners, you know, all at the right time. So, you know, Overdrive, definitely, even if you put aside all the things that our customers have told us about it, you know, it's not fit for the future. So, you know, we won't be able to deliver things like smart speaker support. The other thing that we will be able to do going forward, actually at the point of launch, is deliver our e-braille on the same platform. So it won't just deliver audio, it will deliver e-braille, so our collection of braille that we've you know, transcribed over the past 30 years, and EPUB going forward, which is very much a publisher standard. So, you know, we will be able to deliver even more books in different ways. And, you know, smart speaker support won't be there at launch, but it will come fairly soon afterwards. And that's the kind of development that our customers expect. You know, we are getting, you know, a number of calls a week asking when can I access the library through my Alexa device or Google.
Well, you set them all off now, Alison. You said the word.
I do need to manage expectations, you know, but we definitely have, you know, we have a roadmap. And I think it's also important to say that, you know, we made the decision over a year ago to re-platform, and, you know, we've been working on it. And actually, as we've come on this development journey, other organisations from other countries have got on the bus. So we're actually sharing the same platform with CNIB, the Canadian Institute, Vision Australia, National Council for the Blind in Ireland. You know, they're all kind of aligning with, you know, similar technology. And, you know, we're all offering the same kind of service to our customers. We're, you know, not unique in any one country. So it's great. We can share the benefits of kind of co-development, and we can share content. You know, we're all English-speaking countries. We're all, you know, creating new books in our studios and transcription houses. And so, you know, it should equal more content for more people.
I just want to unpack some of the things you said. I mean, a number of our listeners will be hearing this for the very first time. And, you know, just not, I don't want to skip past anything you said in particular around Braille. We've seen since the rise of affordable Braille displays such as the Orbit Reader, the Braille Me as well, and many others that are coming along that are cheaper, you know, £499, I think £450 for an Orbit Reader now, which, you know, that's if you're an RNIB Connect member. That is a very good price. In fact, if you're, I think, under 25, you even get a deal with Victor, the charity, and RNIB. 28, sorry, yeah, even better, yeah. So if you're under 28 or under, you'll get the opportunity to get access to a subsidised Braille display. Now, this is brilliant, but of course the key thing is, well, that's great, I want to read books on it. where are the books? And that's actually been one of the big challenges for a number of people who've bought one of these Orbit readers. So the fact is now, from what you're saying, I'd be able to, with my Orbit reader, be able to download books in Braille format and be able to read it on these devices.
Yes, absolutely. And anything that we publish, you know, from now on will just arrive, you know, on the new service as we publish it.
And in regards to EPUB as well, now that, I guess, means that if a book comes out, and is often the case, that not always the book is available in audio on the same day as launch. I mean, that would be the ideal situation in life, but, you know, we have to be realistic. It's not going to happen every time. So if it doesn't, you still want access to the book, and being able to listen to it with a synthetic voice at least is a good option for a lot of people, and that's something that, this would offer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the platform's quite clever. It's got a powerful conversion tool in the background. And so, you know, you pick your title and you pick how you want it. You don't have to. You can have a profile that says, I only ever want the real voice audio. But if you're open to, you know, different formats, then, you know, you can have it converted into synthetic audio or into an electronic Braille file and one or two other flavours of electronic text.
So you could even, if you wanted to, you could have it in giant print as well.
Well, you would use something like a Kindle, I guess. You know, it would be an EPUB. You would use the EPUB for a Kindle, and, you know, use the built-in accessibility to scale your font for your preference.
I mean, this is big news, Alison. This is amazing, and you know this, of course. You've been working on it for a year, but you know, and I know how aware of all of this you are. But this is big news to our audience, who will be, I think, rubbing their hands in glee at the fact that, you know, that it appears that all the questions they've been asking and all the things that we've been asking for as a community are coming true and are actually coming to these devices, to us, you know, wherever we, however we want to get our books, which is brilliant. Let me ask a bit about RNIB Newsagent in this. Is there a plan to roll Newsagent into this? I know it's part of it in a way, but I'm always a bit confused as to where it sits. For those who don't know what RNIB Newsagent is, maybe we could explain that first.
Yeah, so RNIB Newsagent is, you know, we provide a whole range of newspapers and magazines in different formats, so audio, lots of different types of electronic text. We do Braille digests, about 20 Braille digests, and some TV and radio guides in large print, about 200 titles all told. And, you know, we have two online platforms at the moment for Newsagent, one for e-text and one for audio. And then we're, you know, producing lots of hard copy as well. And so, you know, The platforms that we use, or certainly the audio one, is chronically legacy. So we have been working to replace that. Newsagent won't be in the online reading platform straight away. It will come, but what we will offer is a better customer experience for our Newsagent customers. We are replacing some of the legacy technology, and we will, and it's part of what I talked about, where we're working with other countries. We need the platform to mature with some of the features that are coming. Mm-hmm. So some of those are being built at the moment. And so it will come, but there's just you know, a few steps to go through to get to I suppose the end state of really a single place for our reading service and a single sign on, and giving people, you know, all of those options of, you know, different apps, you know, devices and postal services.
I mean, there's lots to talk about here. I'm sure our listeners, Alison, are going to have lots of questions, and actually encourage people to get in touch if you've got a question regarding this, you know, to the show. But I'd also say it's probably wise to maybe let the service begin. Let's see what it's like, and, you know, obviously offer feedback. And, you know, not everyone's going to be happy about everything, and, you know, there will be changes and new systems to get used to. But ultimately, this gives us much better access to more books, and what more can you ask for than that? I want to just ask you a little bit about Bookshare, because I had read a little bit about Bookshare, and I didn't really understand what Bookshare was until fairly recently, that essentially it's an educational resource, which tells you about my level of education. But, you know, essentially it's a service for, I guess, those who are in education. Is that something that's been able to be built into this library now, or is that still essentially exclusive to that education side?
It is at this point, but again, we want to look at how we can open that content up to a wider audience. So RNIB Bookshare actually uses the same technology, the same platform as our new online reading service. So there are opportunities to converge. There are over 290,000 educational academic texts on the platform and growing. I think the publisher queue is about another, I think we promised about another 150,000 titles from publishers. We're ingesting kind of at a rate of, you know, several thousand a week. It's a massive success story that, you know, really makes a difference to learners. Having kind of instant access to texts that they need for their studies, but it's got, you know, it's got a lot of books on there that have you know, broader appeal, whether you're, you know, you want to do some lifelong learning, or you're, you know, for employment, lots of kind of management textbooks. So we do want to look at ways to open that collection up to customers. So yeah, that's, again, it's on the roadmap. So yeah, when we embarked on the start of this, we talk about really it's a three-year project start to finish, and we have to start somewhere. If we waited till we got, you know, everything in place, it would be quite a while before we delivered. So it will come in phases, but, you know, we do have a very clear roadmap of, you know, what those stages are, and, you know, what the end state looks like.
Well, it all sounds very exciting, and I know a lot of our listeners are going to be really keen to hear more about this. So just remind us again, Alison, that and the rollout, we're looking at kind of September, October time. Obviously, we'll keep our listeners up to date here on the programme as to when the rollout actually happens, so that we can, you know, can also review and talk about how this new service works. And just to, you know, to talk about that rollout, but also to just quickly tell us how people will access it. Is it all online, as in it's all on a computer, or will you have apps? How does it work?
So you can access by computer, smartphone, tablet. We know that customers like the Dolphin Easy Reader app, so we are working with Dolphin to make sure that that's available at the point of switchover. We will keep Overdrive open for a few months, so we're not, you know, flicking the switch on one and, you know, on and off on the other one. They will run side by side for a while we, you know, support customers to move across. We will get in touch. I mean, the beauty of you know, working with customers who are already using an online service, we can get in touch very easily with them, so they will hear from us you know, when it's ready, and how to log on to the new service, and you know, where to go for support.
Brilliant. Look forward to talking to you again soon, Alison. Thanks for coming on to Tech Talk.
Thank you.
So there you go, some major changes coming to RNIB's Talking Books service. Exciting times, Robin.
Really exciting. I am very excited for this. I'm looking forward to it. So I can carry on using Easy Reader, the Dolphin app, on my phone.
Yes, you can. Yes. And actually, that is one of the things we didn't get to in that interview. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You can still use it. And what's brilliant about that is that, you know, essentially it will hand over. So at some point, the Overdrive service will end, but you won't be left without a service. because there'll be an overlap where you'll be able to sign up to the new service, sign into it essentially, and you know, Overdrive will just die off and that'll be it. So yeah, good news there. If you've got a view on this, if you've been listening thinking, oh, I have many questions here, then send them in because we can put them back to Alison and get answers for you. Now we've got Alison's contact details. We'll be in touch with her on a fairly regular basis. So if you've got something you want to ask, then just get in touch with us. You can email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Now it's time to find out what Robin's been up to this week. He has been learning all about one of the many features that exists in the new iOS 13. He has downloaded the beta version of the software, which means you get it in advance of anyone else to try stuff out if you want to do so. It's a daring thing to do as a blind man, but he's done it. And, well, there's one particular feature he's really liking.
However much we love our smartphones, it's hard sometimes not to feel nostalgic about that physical keyboard. Well, maybe not that physical keyboard, but I'm sure we have fond memories of when mobile phones had some physical buttons that we could feel when we were typing out our text messages, etc. Now in iOS 13, you can have haptic feedback. Every time you move onto a different letter on the keyboard, onto a different number, on the number pad, on the lock screen, for example, it will give you a tap. And whilst it's not bringing back those physical keys, at least something's going on under your finger. And for me, that makes all the difference in the world. It's like instant feedback. And that's how it's supposed to be in the real world. You feel something. So in iOS 13, what you need to do to turn on haptic feedback as you move your finger around items on the screen is go into the voiceover settings and you will find an item called
audio button.
And if we double tap on that, it takes us to a page that includes
sounds and haptics button.
A button for sounds and haptics. And this takes us into a page
sounds and haptics heading sounds off,
where you can make changes to the sounds that voiceover makes, and also how much haptic feedback you get when you're doing things like typing. And you might have heard there, it says sounds off. That's why you're not hearing any of the bleeps or boops that VoiceOver usually makes. I'm trying it with no sound feedback at all at the moment. You know, why not? I've got haptic feedback. I roam my finger around the screen and everything that's under my finger, including letters, numbers, icons, and everything, gives me haptic feedback, and I'm just gonna drive it like that for a while, and believe me, it's a novel experience. So my sounds are off.
Haptics on.
Haptics are on. That's the next button down, or the next control. And if we went into that, we could make loads of changes to which things provided haptic feedback and under what circumstances. And you can even
haptic intensity 60% adjustable,
change the intensity of the haptic feedback that you get. So we've got a keyboard up now. If I run my finger, for example, across the top row of keys,
Q W E R T Y Y,
and lift my finger off, so you didn't hear any voiceover noises there, you heard a tiny tick perhaps when the key was sent to the text field, but each time my finger moves from one key to the next, I get a nice, reassuring tap on my finger, and it really feels like I'm interacting with something through the glass. So guys, give it a go, being able to move your finger around the screen and it actually giving you physical feedback. For me, it's really helped with typing. I hope it does with you too. When the full iOS 13 is launched in a few weeks, have a play. Back to the studio.
Thank you for that, Robin. There you go. That is the haptic feedback option that is available on iOS 13, which is due out quite soon, Robin. I think we're talking about? Middle of September, potentially? iOS 13 will officially...
Yep, a week after. It's usually a week after the event, and that's the 10th, so yeah.
Yeah. Is that confirmed? that it's the 10th of September?
September, not officially, but absolutely. I would put 50 pence on it.
Oh, a whole 50 pence? Yep. Oh, well, I raise you, my friend, to a pound. I shall put down a full pound.
Steady
on,
guys, steady on.
I know it's getting a bit crazy around here, isn't it? The money's just flying around. I think we're rich or something. Right, OK, let's move on because it is time for Ask Tech Talk. Andy.
Yes, this week's question comes from Mel.
Hi, guys. Mel Maidment here. Here's the scenario, then. Work computer running the latest version of JAWS and Windows 10 and using TeamViewer for remote access to a computer which has no screen reading software installed upon it. So the question is, will JAWS act as a virtual screen reader and read out what's displayed on the customer computer which has no screen reader software installed so that remote access and control is able? Hope you can answer this question because I've read many conflicting ideas on the internet and I'm not too sure. Great show. Thanks for your hard work. Bye.
So that was Mel's question, and here is the answer coming from Davinder at the RNIB Technology for Life team.
Hi, this is Davinder from the Technology for Life team. So this is an interesting question about how to support somebody in this context. Now, given that this is a enterprise or work solution that you're after, the first solution that comes to mind would be an enterprise solution called Remote Incident Manager by a company called Ceratech. Now, what they do is they offer a service whereby an individual who is blind has the ability to remote log into any machine, but it does need a piece of software to be installed on the other end, which is a very small file, and it allows for the host to log into the other machine, and if the blind engineer then accesses that machine with no screen reader, it enables them to hear everything that's happening on the machine they've logged in. There's a lot of information online if you look onto Ceratech's website, and there are another option to this is companies at the moment within the sector who can offer such support, given that it's a costed solution. So I think the considerations that one needs to give on this situation is, given it's a costed enterprise solution, how much money does one invest in it? How much support is required? And as a result, the feasibility. If the answer is it's not feasible, then option two may be to approach other providers who use this mechanism and utility and ask about the opportunities to support any requests in that instance as well. I hope this information is helpful. Any other questions, please do contact the Technology for Life service on 0303 123 9999. Thanks so much.
And of course, if you want to get in touch and ask a question to Tech Talk, which of course we will put to the Technology for Life team, you can do that as well. And the great thing about doing that is that you give the answer to everyone else as well, so everyone gets the answer. That's a really interesting question this week, Robin, and I know you've got some bits you want to add on to that as well.
Yeah, I mean, that does require installing a file, so you need to get permissions to do that. In a corporate situation, it might be that IT would need to get involved so that the machines that you're supporting have permission to install that little file there. But that's a really good solution. And the other one that I would think of, TeamViewer obviously allows you to send keystrokes. That's how you can support the other person, as well as mouse clicks. But if you're blind, then you're a keystroke person. Just use the hotkey Windows Control Enter to open Narrator, and just have the person on the phone. So while you're supporting them, have them on the phone, have Narrator speaking out loud, and hopefully it'll get picked up through the phone call as well. That's not ideal, I know, but if it's something that you only need to do very occasionally with people that aren't able to install that little application, then just, yeah, listen to Narrator across the phone as you're controlling their computer through TeamViewer. Prior to 1803, I think it was, Windows 10, and all earlier versions of Windows, it's just Windows key plus Enter, not Control Windows Enter. And just a quick reminder about Tandem, JAWS Tandem. Now, this is if both parties have JAWS on their machine. So this isn't really related to Mel's question, but if you are a JAWS user yourself and you're supporting somebody else who's a JAWS user, then just use JAWS Tandem. go into the utilities and then Tandem and then Quickstart, I think it's called. And there you can very quickly set up a Tandem session and control the other person's computer by keystrokes and hear what's going on their machine.
Yeah, that is a feature I've never used. Again, like I mentioned earlier, I'm day two guy. So, you know, I'm still working out how to use my computer, never mind someone else's. But I think that's really good. And I'm really glad someone brought that up because, of course, there are a lot of people in the world of work who've got jobs who maybe are looking to get into jobs, especially IT support. And being able to do that is really important, being able to support someone else's computer. A question I imagine a lot of people might have had, which is why I'm really glad we started this Ask Tech Talk series, because it gives people the chance to ask those kinds of questions, things you might not have thought of, or things that in passing you've thought of but thought might be a silly question. No silly questions here, I promise you. But keep those questions coming in. The hashtag is Ask Tech Talk on Twitter. Leave us a message on Facebook, or of course, you can email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. I know lots of you have sent in questions. We will get through those questions. I want the answers to come from the Technology for Life team. And of course, Robin here, who knows everything. I know nothing, by the way. I just like to remind people. No, it's not fake news. It's not fake news. Right, it's time for this.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
Yes, we do.
Here's your mail today.
It is a cheese fest, and I love that jingle. Andy, you've got the inbox, and my goodness, the inbox is full again.
Oh, so many emails. Where to start?
Can I just say thank you to everyone who emails in? Every single email is a joy. We try to get every single email read out on air. Maybe not exactly the week you send it in, but we do try. We only get an hour.
There's only so many hours in the show.
Yes, that's right. There's only so many minutes in this hour.
Yes.
So what's our first email today?
So we're going to start with Maria, who says, "Hi, Tech Talk team. I am Maria from Australia. I'm just listening to your latest episode. There was an email from a listener asking about using the Victor Stream and the Mac.
Oh, yeah.
There is a way to be able to read and write to a drive that has been formatted for Windows. All you need is a program called NTFS for Mac. Once installed, it runs in the background and it just works. I also think it might be possible to connect the Victor Stream to the Mac and it should come up as a drive. I hope this information helps." That's from Maria.
That's actually a brilliant idea. You know, a piece of software there. What was it called again? NTFS Explorer for Mac?
Yes, NTFS for Mac is what it's
NTFS
been,
for Mac. Yeah. I think that's the one I might have used in the past. You get these utilities, don't you, Robin, with the Mac that you can download, you can install. Some of them you've got to pay for or whatever. But they do add a lot of extra features and they kind of just work away in the background. Maybe that's why I've not had any problems with my Victoria. I did try it this week and I didn't have any issues writing to the drive. Possibly that's why I've already installed that.
Yeah, brilliant tip.
Yeah, really good one. Okay, well, thank you, Maria, for that. Really appreciate you listening all the way in Australia. Lovely to have you with us and still with us. I know you've been with us a while. So thank you for emailing in once again. Let's get to another email.
This one's from Anne, who says, "Hi, Stephen, Robin and Andy. Firstly, I would just like to say how much I enjoy the show each week. It is fantastic."
Yay.
"Stephen, after listening to a recent show and the amount of times you mentioned the Apple TV, I was hoping that you could help me with something. I listened to the piece by Julie when she mentioned that ITV Hub is now carrying AD, and I was delighted to hear this news. I stopped listening to the podcast for a few minutes on my phone to go and check out the ITV Hub app. It did indeed have audio description. But over the weekend, I sat down to watch Wild Bill on Apple TV and was so disappointed to find that it didn't have AD. Even though the Apple TV is iOS, the ITV Hub different, I assumed that it would work since it worked no bother on the iPhone. All of the apps update automatically on the Apple TV, so if there was an update, it should have installed the latest version. Do you know why audio description isn't in the ITV Hub app for Apple TV? And is it something that will be included in the future? We have waited so long to get AD on ITV Hub. Maybe I should just be grateful that it works on the iPhone for now. Keep up the great work." That's from Anne.
Well, first of all, Anne, I think you shouldn't be grateful at all. It is ridiculous. Sorry, I get really on my high horse about this one, Robin, as you know. Audio description, it should just be available, and it is ridiculous that it's not on the Apple TV. You're absolutely right, it's not there. So what happened was, after we recorded that show, I had gone home and I was, again, like you, Anne, very excited. I turned on my Apple TV and I thought, it must be there. They've now got it on Apple phones. They've now got it on Android phones. So surely it'll be updated on the app. And there was an update to the ITV Hub. When you go through it with VoiceOver, you get, well, I should say on the app, it'll say ITV Hub recently updated, right? So I was, oh, excellent. That must mean it's there. It wasn't. I did. In fact, funnily enough, I went to exactly the same show, Wild Bill, because I quite fancied watching it. And it didn't have AD. And I'd used that one because that was the one we tried on the phone. So I knew it had audio description on that show. It's not there. So I've been in touch with our broadcasting team here at RNIB to ask the question, has anyone else had this problem? And ultimately the answer they've got back from ITV is, we're rolling it out. We will get there. We will update the app as necessary. And that was it, really. That was all we got. So essentially what they've done is they've updated the Apple TV, the Apple phone app. They've not got around to doing the Apple TV app. And I suppose, Robin, the issue is, and I don't want to sound apologetic here for ITV, but it is a process of updating app by app, and they maybe have more than one team that works on this.
I mean, the only issue is prioritization, how much they prioritize that feature, because, you know, that app was updated, like you say, had some other features, but not AD added in. And it's literally how much they care about making sure that these things are rolled out efficiently and, you know, timely. It was been so long that they haven't had AD at all. But I mean, you know, I'd like to say that, you know, good for them adding it in, and let's hope it's not going to be too long. But at the same time, you know, it does say something about their priorities when it's been on other channels for so long.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, I remember this nonsense when you you could get audio description on an Android phone as long as it was a Tuesday and, you know, it was sunny outside. You know, that nonsense. Whereas now, okay, great, we get it on the Apple phone. But again, most people watch TV on television. So Apple TV would seem like an obvious one. So I will say there's a little bit of a trick you can use, and I encourage you to do it, only if you don't want the picture. Again, this is ridiculous. But you can AirPlay from your phone to your Apple TV, right? So you can send essentially the video to the TV, but they don't send the video, they only send the audio. So if you can live without the picture, as some blind people do, then you can watch it on your television, but you'd have to AirPlay it from there. So essentially you're sending the signal, sending the audio from your phone to your TV. It's not what I would call the best solution in the world, but it is the only way to do it currently until they update that app. So, come on, ITV, get on with it. So, sorry, Anne, no yes to you on that one, but hopefully we'll get an answer soon. Anyway, let's get another email.
Dear Steve and Rob, this comes an email from Karen. Mm-hmm. I have a TV Onyx with my TV and it speaks the stations, plus it is all audible when you record programs and it will give you all the info about what the program is about. I bought mine from the RNIB, but they do not sell them now. I listen every week to your program and I found it very interesting. I still have the original version of the Victor Stream. Uh-huh. When I was at Site Village, I was tempted to buy the one with the Wi-Fi and the podcast and internet radio station, so I'll think about it. I have the first edition of the Smart Vision 2 phone from Computer Room Services. You will think that I am old-fashioned, but I wanted a phone with a keypad on it because that was the easiest way for me. Best wishes, that's from Karen.
Listen, if it works for you, Karen, no issue on from my point of view. In fact, I'll be honest, the blinder I get, the more buttons I like. I tend to be getting that way a little bit. I like buttons. I like physical buttons.
Haptic feedback.
haptic feedback, yeah. Okay, sort of buttons, I guess. The TV Onyx box, that comes up from time to time. Unfortunately, that company folded a good number of years ago. It was a brilliant product. I bought one, I can't remember where from, I think from eBay at the time, and I liked it. It was a great product, but ultimately, you know, the company's gone. Really, the only options you have these days, which is, again, ridiculous, but the only options you have really are TVs that have got smart tech built in. So you essentially have to buy a television. There are no, to my understanding, still no standalone Freeview talking set-top boxes, which you'd think a company like Freeview would get behind really quickly. You know, they want everyone to be digital. They want everyone to be moving to this. What, blind people don't count in that? I always find that very strange. It's, again, it's priorities, Robin, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, AbilityNet did some work with the UView project, which was supposed to be the ultimate accessible FreeView box.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And there are several that run on the UView OS, but they stopped short of implementing the speech output, as far as I can tell, because like you say, no boxes offer that. Listeners, if you know differently, please let us know. But yeah, so that's a shame because, you know, from a VI point of view, from a UX point of view, the ease of use of the interface, UView is really good. But yeah, no speech.
What UView did at the time, I remember we did some work here at RNIB as well, it's probably a similar time you guys did at AbilityNet. Essentially, what they did was make the app accessible. So you could actually control the box using the app. But again, this all is predicated on the idea that you use a smartphone, that you use that technology. If you just want the standalone features, if you just only use the box, you've got a problem. One solution that is out there at the minute, which I think, if I'm honest, they're doing this really well. I mean, there's two, really. And you know what I'm going to say? It starts with Apple and ends in TV. That's an accessible set-top box, right? But you don't get... If you wanted to record shows on it, you're not going to get that feature. If you maybe want to watch live TV, you can do that by downloading the TV Player app, which is reasonably accessible. And what it does is really just stream you Freeview channels. I think you can pay extra to watch other channels, but you won't get Sky on there or anything. If you want TV, of course, you've got iPlayer, you've got ITV Hub, you've got Four or All Four, and My5, which you can watch on demand. And the only one out of all of that that doesn't have audio description, I'll say it again, is ITV. BBC, you've got AD, All Four, My5. Just saying, guys. But you've also got things on there like Now TV. If you're not fussed about audio description, you've got Now TV. You've got, I'm trying to think of the other ones. Oh, you've got Netflix, of course, that's got AD. You've got Prime, some of that's got AD. So all that's built into that box. And all of those user interfaces are fully accessible. That's a good thing. The other option that's out there is the Synaptic TV box. And that's a good option for you as well, but it's pretty expensive. It's £650 for the box, but it is a fully accessible option. Comes with, you know, a little camera for Skype as well. You get a Bluetooth keyboard, so you don't have to use the remote control if you don't want. It's got really good high contrast buttons as well. So, you know, it depends on what you're looking for. But Synaptic TV box is pretty popular, I think. You can stream from BBC and All Four and Netflix as well. You can watch live TV, but again, you can't record on it. So there are options out there, but the TVonics, from my understanding, the only place you can get it now is Vitech Solutions. And essentially, they are second-hand boxes. You don't get the option of, you know, a brand new box anymore because they don't make them. So there we go. Anyway, sorry to leave you on a sad one there, but that's the truth of it. But, you know, at the same token, there are options out there. It just depends on what your thoughts are. We don't have time for any more. That's it. We're out of time. But thank you so much for listening. Remember, ask Tech Talk any question you've got, or if you just want to comment on something you've heard, we love to hear your thoughts, especially around RNIB's new Talking Book service, what your thoughts are. Email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And of course, you can get in touch with us on Twitter and on Facebook. Robin and Andy, thank you again, guys.
Thanks both.
Thank you.